Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, July 13th. Roll call, please.
Here.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Costello is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Lubin.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here as well. The council just adjourned from closed session where we discussed legal issue and also labor issues, and we have no report at this time. Item number three is our flag salute, and this evening we have the Arroyo Grande Lions Club that will lead us in the flag salute, and then afterwards, if you'll remain standing for our invocation, Pastor Paul Jones is here this evening. Bob, how are you?
I'm just fine, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. And if you will just bear with me for 1 second, with your permission, I would like to dedicate the flag salute tonight to one of our past members who we lost at the end of June, Lion Cecil Montgomery. Cecil was born in this area, lived here his entire life. He loved this community. He was a dedicated family man, and he was showed kindness and dedication that we could all aspire to. And so I hope that is satisfactory to you. We all will miss Cecil very much. So would you all please follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you please bow your heart with me in prayer? Our Heavenly Father, our American history teaches us that our third president, Thomas Jefferson, spoke to our nation in 1781. He said, "God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. Can these liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are a gift of God?" It is in this spirit that we pray this invocation tonight. We are grateful that our United States Congress passed a resolution in 1954 stating, "We are one nation under God, indivisible." And in 1956, the Congress stated our national anthem, "In God we trust." And so tonight we give bold affirmation to this truth, "In God we trust." We invoke your blessings upon the city of Arroyo Grande and all who live here, and all the guests who visit here. We pray that you would release your blessings upon all who work at City Hall and who serve our community. Cause each one to sense the strength and the security of your invisible presence. Give your eternal wisdom to our friends whom we are freely elected to serve on our City Council. From day to day, help them as they endeavor to make Arroyo Grande a better place to live and to enjoy life. And especially tonight, give your divine guidance in the thought processes of every council person. May the decisions that are made honor you and be for the betterment of all of our citizens and our guests.
A very interesting year. We, of course, are always looking for community service projects to be involved in. We do work at Camp French for the Boy Scouts. We're involved with the Harvest Festival Committee. We're just planning our next year coming up, but of course our major effort is always for vision and sight, and we sponsor sight testing in the schools, and we offer sight services for people who can't otherwise afford them. So if they, people in the community need that, we're always available to help where they need help. So we're looking forward to another good year this coming year.
Great. Well, we appreciate the work that you do for the community and appreciate you being here tonight and leading us in the flag salute.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You bet. Thank you. Now that will take us to item five, special presentations. And at this time, I'd like to invite Mr. Fred Sweeney to meet me at the podium, if you would. How are you this evening, Fred?
Good, how are you?
Fine. This evening, I have the honor of a special presentation for Fred Sweeney, and many of you who've been following the work that he's been doing on the design and the workshops for the new City Hall You know that we have thanked you profusely from the dais, but this evening we wanted to do it right. And so what we've prepared this evening is a plaque that we would like to present to you formally. And this is a mayor's commendation presented to Fred L. Sweeney, AIA, for outstanding contributions to the community through coordination of the City Hall Feasibility Study and Needs Assessment, July 13, 2004. Fred, it's an honor to present this to you. We are very grateful for the work that you've done towards the development of our new City Hall. So the mic is yours.
Well, I'd like to, again, thank everyone. I've mentioned that several times. Thank to my staff. My wife is with me this evening, Jane, who has tolerated my trips out of town. But I do hope this thing moves forward, and I wish the City of Arroyo Grande the best of luck in making it really happen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have another presentation this evening. 5B is a presentation on ride-on transportation.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Mark Schaefer. I'm the Executive Director of Ride-On Transportation. We're a nonprofit organization serving the entire county. But what I wanted to share with you tonight was a service specifically for Arroyo Grande, and hopefully if people come to you with questions about transportation, we can help you out. Ride-On has three divisions, as we call them. The first one, the CTSA, is our social service transportation. The TMA is our services for the general public. And then we also do public contracts where we bid to provide services for the city or services with the regional transit authority. In the first area, under social service transportation, we do CalWORKs transportation to get CalWORKs people that public transportation doesn't work for. We get them to their jobs or back home. We do quite a few shuttles to Arroyo Grande Hospital and other medical facilities, as well as Medi-Cal transportation, which is free for individuals that are in a wheelchair or the vanpool program. We now operate 28 vanpools around the county and actually have quite a few that operate along this corridor between Santa Maria and San Luis Obispo. And with the gas prices going up, we're getting quite a few requests for some other vanpools. Our vanpools are unique in that they serve many business sites because it's kind of a cooperative vanpool. And so they're kind of public vanpools because different people can get on there. We're the Amport Amtrak shuttle, kind of the super shuttle of San Luis Obispo County. We also do emergency guaranteed ride home, which anybody that rides the bus or carpools, and if they get sick during the day or work overtime, they just call Ride-On and we'll pick them up at work and take them home for just $4 anywhere in our county or into Santa Maria. We also, for businesses, have a free program called the Rideshare Incentive Program that rewards employees that do ride the bus or vanpool or carpool. They earn points that they can trade in for movie tickets, lunches, and other prizes. Again, trying to promote people to leave their cars at home. And in the last area, public transit, we provide the Napomo Transit service that used to come into Arroyo Grande, but they kind of narrowed the scope of it. But anyway, I wanted to thank you for this opportunity to share these services with you. Our phone number's on there as well as our website, and please don't hesitate to call us if anybody needs some help with transportation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Before you leave, any member of the council have questions at all about Mark's presentation?
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Thank you. That will take us to item number 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, I'd like to add a specific agenda item, and that would be at the council's doing here, but it's my understanding that Craig Kaiser passed away this last week, and he was the senior commission, my appointee. He's died of cancer, I believe, and I'd like to close this particular meeting in honor of Craig Kaiser.
Okay. I don't think we need that as an additional agenda item, but we can just agree to, by consensus, to do that. You know, certainly,
yeah, it's not an agenda item, but it's when we're doing agenda review, it's probably the appropriate time to bring
absolutely.
It up and let everyone know.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, that will take us to item number 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act prohibits the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on this evening's agenda. But if you do have an issue that you would like to bring forward, please do so. We'd appreciate it if you'd do it in 3 minutes or less and address the council as a whole.
Randy. In 1948, and I found that there are some people that you can't work with. It doesn't pay to try and work with some groups. I do not live in a city, but I have property within a city. I believe our property has rights that should be considered. I also believe it is our responsibility to market it. Yes, it is for sale. Another little item I have is the city allowing people to come on our property and stay out of the easement areas and pile junk all around. If the city has a right, they should at least give us the courtesy to let us know what's going on. My big concern in this town is, do we have any property rights in Arroyo Grande? Most cities you do have. I have a good motto for the city of Arroyo Grande. I think it would help your growth situation very well. Way to stop growth in Arroyo Grande is to tell the people that there are no property rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, are we following up on that utility easement thing?
Yes. I was told today by our building supervisor that we believe it's been resolved, but there was some problems. And a legitimate complaint, I think we got a result.
Okay. Thank you.
Question for Steve, if I may. Is this piece of property you're talking about, was that originally in the city limits when it was incorporated, or do you know?
The Frederick's property this involves is in the city limits.
And it's been there ever since incorporation?
I believe so.
Anyone else who would like to come forward matters that are not on this evening's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment or community comment, and that will take us to item number 8, the consent agenda. This is normally an item that a group of items that we approve as a whole in one action, unless there is a certain item that a member of council would like to pull for further clarification or questions. Is there any member of the council that would like to pull items 8, any item from 8A to 8K?
I have a question on 8K, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, I also would like some clarification on 8I. Okay, any others? Okay, seeing none, then I will entertain a motion for approval for consent items 8I through 8K, with the exception of 8A through 8K, with the exceptions of 8I and 8K. 8I is a consideration of the annual agreement with the Economic Vitality Corporation of San Luis Obispo County. And this is a board that I used to sit on, and now the Mayor Pro Tem sits on it, and as indicated in the staff report, Mayor Pro Tem was past chair. There's reference in the staff report to the loan program, the small business loan program. And then I'm not certain if the service is still available, but there was also the ability for cities to contribute to the EVC a sort of an inventory of available business property, vacant land, vacant structures, so on and so forth, so that sort of on a countywide basis, the availability and the potential for locating businesses within certain jurisdictions would be there, and it would be information that they would know about, and from an economic standpoint, certainly would be to our benefit. What I don't see in this staff report is information that I think the EVC used to provide, and maybe it was forthcoming in a stack of information and I didn't see it, but is there some form of a reference that we could get our hands on that shows direct benefit to the city in the form of our businesses that have applied for and been successful in getting loans? And then also, has the EVC recently referred any new businesses into Arroyo Grande? So those are my questions.
Okay. Let me try to respond to that, Mr. Mayor. I think let's start with the first one, which is the loan program. The small business loan program has actually been extremely successful recently over the last couple of years, and that is headed up by Dave. Well, I just drew a blank on his last name. Anyways, an ex-banker that works for the EVC, and he's done an outstanding job. That is a program that has benefited numerous small businesses on a guarantee program, so that the EVC, which has approximately $750,000 in cash in reserves, will guarantee loans, and those loans are usually in the amounts of anywhere from $5,000 up to $50,000. They'll guarantee that along with community bank. Most recently, it's been Mission Bank that has been heavily involved in the program. So that's been a very successful program. Everything from a hot dog stand outside of one of the box stores in San Luis Obispo to a water service store. It's been doing very well, and they've had no major losses in that program, which I'm pleased to say, because we started a loan committee about 2 years ago to make sure that that was monitored. In terms of reporting, Pat McClassen, who is the person responsible for the new business or the new businesses coming into the county,
Yeah, and the only reason why I raise this is because, you know, we also contribute to the VCB, and we do get that report periodically. They let us know specifically what they're doing in relation to each of the member cities. And I know that, and you don't have to sell me on the loan program. I think it's great, and I recall back when Grand Avenue was under repair, there were a couple of our businesses that took advantage of that loan program, and you know, it saw them through the difficult times. That's what it's there for. It's just that I guess my question is the degree or the frequency to which Arroyo Grande businesses are making use of that loan program these days, and that's what I don't know.
Yeah. I think we could probably ask for them to provide us with some data as to what's gone on recently.
And I apologize. I thought about that afterwards. It should have been part of the report. They had been providing it for a while periodically, and I thought the council was getting it, and that's why.
Actually, I did not read the contract that we're renewing, but I believe there is something in there that says they're supposed to provide us with an annual report.
It calls for that, yeah. And we also did submit some information on particular properties we had targeted that we'd like their help in marketing, and so they have that information. And we ourselves, hopefully through this other program we're working with the small business development center on, where we're targeting different areas and actually going door to door and talking to business owners about their needs and how we can assist and how the SBDC can assist. During those discussions, we've also had a few businesses where we've discussed that loan program, and so we're using that as a tool on some of the businesses that we're trying to assist directly. So it gives a nice tool for us, you know, whether it ends up panning out or not. It's nice to have that tool in the toolbox.
Okay. Not that I'm asking for more paper or things to read, but it would be nice, particularly around the time that we renew the membership, if we could get a summary of activity that is specific to the city, that would help. Okay, those were my questions. I think what we will do is go ahead and open up 8K. Councilmember Runnels?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I think this question is going to be for Dawn. You know, as every year when we clean out the creek, I see we have to have an environmental consultant to stand there and watch and make sure that people are cutting the right weeds and not their finger or something like that. But it seems to me like when we're going to spend $13,000 or $14,000 for somebody to stand there and supervise and not do anything, I'm beginning to have a problem with this, because all of the things that we've done in the creek over the past years with the environmental work that's happened with the retrofit of the dam and whatnot, the creek is getting more money than the road department. So, you know, how much time do they spend and what do they do?
Well, you know, as you know, the requirements for getting into the creek have slowly and steadily increased over time. And this is just the latest of a number of things that we've had to do. They basically go out and do a survey to find out where there might be some endangered species in the area that we're going to clean. Normally they do that at night. And then what they do is they write a little report, and they direct us on where we can go and how we can do the operation that we want to do, which is clearing brush. And then they
follow. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Member Reynolds?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Lubin?
Yes.
Council Board Member Diggins?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 9, public hearings. Our first public hearing is 9A, consideration of adoption of an ordinance and resolution regarding undergrounding utilities and the establishment of an underground utility in lieu fee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Our administrative intern, John Ansoldebaher, will be making the presentation again this evening. John.
Good evening. On June 22, 2004, the City Council introduced an ordinance amending Oro Grande Municipal Code Section 16.68.050 regarding underground utilities and the establishment of an underground utility in lieu fee. The proposed underground utility in lieu fee will establish an alternative for the underground utility requirement set forth by Section 16.68 of the Development Code. Under the proposed amendment, developers may have an option to pay a fee in lieu of utility undergrounding if special circumstances are determined to exist by the approving authority. The ordinance specifies that the amount of the fee shall be set forth by council resolution and be based on an estimated general average cost of utility undergrounding by private utility providers per linear foot of each side of the property subject to the underground relocation. Due to the complexity of the underground utility construction, a study detailing underground utility construction cost averages per linear foot was used to determine an in-lieu fee amount that is both fair and appropriate. The study analyzed past and current projects, as well as underground utility in-lieu fee programs in other cities. Based on the study, the average cost to underground utilities is $231.80 per linear foot. Therefore, staff proposes the City of Arroyo Grande's underground utility in-lieu fee will be established at $232 per linear foot in underground utility cases deemed appropriate for the in-lieu fee. We'd be happy to try and answer any questions you have, and it is respectfully recommended the City Council adopt this ordinance amending Municipal Code Section 16.68.050 regarding underground utilities and adopt the proposed resolution establishing an underground utility in-lieu fee. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any questions, clarifications in the staff report? Okay, seeing none, This is a public hearing. If there is any member of the audience who would like to come forward and speak on item 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council. Councilmember Runnels, why don't you start this one for us?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I agree with the language that the staff has put into this. And, you know, for the last several years when we went to some of these smaller districts to underground things, it has been very burdensome for some people to take and put one unit or two units and have to spend $30,000 or $40,000 for undergrounding. And I think where we're going to establish a fee for a neighborhood, I think we're on the right page, and I support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, yeah, I too. I think this has been a hurdle for both our planning commission and this council on several occasions in regards to equity and fairness.
Other issue would be those small projects that are within a older section where it's impossible to underground surrounding utilities. This will offer the ability to have the contractor or developer put some money into a fund to help other areas. And so I'm in agreement with the whole process, and I support the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. I, too, have no issue with this. The I'm hoping that the fund will become viable soon, and I like the language in the ordinance that allows us to prioritize where we can apply those funds and perhaps do a better job of mitigating some of the viewshed issues that are caused by some of these utility lines. So I think we're on the right track with this, and I support it as well. With that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the City Council approve an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Arroyo Grande Municipal Code, Section 050, regarding underground utilities and the establishment of an underground utility in lieu fee.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Runnels?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Do we have a second motion on the resolution?
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the City Council approve a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande setting forth the amount of the City of Arroyo Grande's underground utility in lieu fee.
Second also.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the resolution? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Runnels?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 9B, consideration of tentative tract map, case number 04001, condominium tract map for previously approved 60-unit senior apartment complex.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Let me get set up here. Yeah, it is. This is the green light. Sorry? Oh, thank you.
No brace tonight, huh, Kelly?
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, you still have it, yeah. I didn't hear the metal detector go off when you walked in, so.
Okay, the project site is located in the Oak Park Acres planned development on Camino Mercado, adjacent to a variety of uses, including an office development to the west, residential development to the east, open space to the north, and then the five-city shopping center to the south. The property slopes up from Camino Mercado and contains numerous oak trees mixed with native and non-native vegetation. Everything physical that was approved before would remain the same. The only exceptions are that one covered parking space per tenant would be located within 100 feet of the respective unit, and that 200 cubic feet of enclosed storage space would be provided per unit. Planning Commission and staff also recommend that the 15 moderate income restricted units be divided into 9 moderate and 6 low income units. And this slide just shows the layout of each individual unit on the site. And this slide just illustrates the California Craftsman architectural style. Again, nothing physical has changed with the project. The layout is exactly the same. The project site was extensively graded for a convalescent center about 20 years ago that resulted in the removal of many oak trees and then a creation of a large building pad with unfinished retaining walls. That project was ultimately abandoned without providing mitigation for all the environmental impacts imposed to the property. The current applicant has made an effort to design a project that is sensitive to the site, requiring as little grading and tree removal as possible. To accomplish this and avoid massive retaining walls, council approved an amendment to the project in August of last year that allowed construction easements on city open space property. However, tree removal was still unavoidable. At the beginning of this year, the city issued a permit allowing the applicant to remove 18 oak trees for the approved apartment project. The Planning Commission considered this project on 2 separate occasions. That was May 18th and June 1st. Issues discussed included removal of the 18 oak trees approved for construction of the apartments, the status and timing of installing the traffic signal at the intersection of Camino Mercado and West Branch Street, existing laws regulating senior housing, Subdivision Map Act requirements related to condominiums, affordable housing requirements, and then financial assistance for providing low-income housing. The net financial loss to the applicant by restricting 6 of the units to low-income housing is estimated to be approximately $715,000. Based on the county's affordable housing standards that were just updated this month, and that figure is not in your staff report. It's been increased by a few thousand. Staff recommends that fee credits related to park impacts be increased to $70,000 as concession for providing a senior center, and that management of the senior center be by a nonprofit such as the South County Seniors, be in perpetuity instead of the minimum of 10 years identified in the original conditions of approval. Staff is also recommending that the original approval of $40,700 from the Affordable Housing Assistance Fund be eliminated. Planning Commission and staff recommends that the council adopt a resolution approving tentative tract map 04001, allowing 4 sale condominium units to be constructed instead of rental apartments. Staff further recommends that condition number 83 of the original use permit be amended to state that management of the senior center be in perpetuity instead of a minimum of 10 years. Adopting the resolution included in your staff report would include the conditions of the previously approved conditional use permit as amended. And then the case where conditions are in conflict, the conditions for this tentative tract map would prevail. The expiration date for this tentative tract map supersedes all other approved CUP approvals for this particular property. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Kelly on the staff report? Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, I have a couple, Kelly. First, I noticed that in the staff report there was a comment made by a member of the public asking about the mitigation that can be done about the removal of the oak trees. Can you explain? I know that was done in the adoption of the resolution number 3706, but could you reiterate for the public as well what mitigation was put in place for the oak tree removal, and explain to me again about the additional 90 trees that I believe in the resolution, page 5. It talks about an in-lieu fee. Anyways, could you just highlight that for me?
Are you talking about the mitigation for the tree removal originally?
Correct.
I believe it's 8 trees that are going to be for each tree removed for a specific number of trees. And I'd have to look it up to see the exact number. And then there was going to be a payment of in-lieu fees for the remainder. And I'm sorry, I'd have to look up the exact numbers.
Well, I'll read it here. It says, to satisfy tree removal mitigation requirements, the applicant shall plant 54, 5, and 15-gallon coast live oak trees on and off-site per the approved tree protection and replacement plan, or as modified by the Parks and Rec director and so forth, and pay $13,500 as tree removal in-lieu fees for the 90 replacement trees that cannot be accommodated on or off-site. Now, I'm assuming that's because of the magnet, the high ratio of trees. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. That was just one clarification I wanted to make, and I don't know whether that individual is in the audience tonight or not, but I think that was a good question because that was a big thing for us, I believe, in regards to that tree removal. The second issue, Kelly, is in regards to the fee credits that are being recommended by staff, and it's a little bit of confusion, at least on my part, as I read the staff report. This evening you're recommending that we increase the fee credits related to park impacts to $70,000. What's unclear to me is of impact fees due to the affordable housing or the low income, which would be approximately $34,000, the $70,000 from the park impact fees, and just under $4,000 for the community center impact fees. We're talking about a total of about a little under $108,000. Okay. Thank you. Those are my two questions.
Okay. Any other questions, clarifications?
One other clarification, Mr. Mayor, and I think that's pretty much been taken care of. I had a question to Tim today about the senior center, because I know that reading this, I didn't find any place that basically dedicated that senior center for perpetuity circumstances, but you related tonight that that's going to be in the new agreement?
Yes.
Okay, because it's not on my paper that's in that way.
Yeah, we would be, with your motion to approve the project, you would include that condition number 83 be amended to state that.
Because I'm sure that if it wasn't set up that way, that somebody would be changing it in 4 or 5 years so they had a private club, so to speak.
And that was really the justification for increasing the amount of the park fees that were credited, because that had been 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. So they increased that, so we felt that was a better benefit worth additional credits.
Those are all my questions.
I have one follow-up comment on the senior center portion. The resolution and the agreements call for it to be managed by an outside nonprofit. And I had to dig deep into the CC&Rs to find out that the Homeowner Association would take care of the maintenance, long-term maintenance. Do we need anything in our agreement to shore that up in terms of the maintenance of the center?
We can certainly include that. So why not?
Or is it, Mr. City Attorney, is that sufficient to be in the CC&R? Is it?
It's sufficient to be in the CC&Rs. I'm thinking whether it's appropriate for the city to include you want a specific condition imposed?
The concern I have is that 8, 10, 15 years from now, the thing's falling apart and nobody wants to take responsibility for maintaining it. While it's being managed by the senior citizens, it's not being maintained in a proper manner. So that would be a concern. Even though it's in the CC&Rs, there's no real tool that says they have to do it. It just says they will do it.
Yeah, let me nosh on that for a minute. Okay. Let me think about it for a second and see how to approach it.
Thank you.
I had a couple of questions, Kelly. And I guess it deals with the category of housing that we're talking about this evening, This project was originally approved for rental units. And I guess my question is, what is the rationale or the logic for converting to condos?
Well, the rationale is that, well, I know why the applicant's doing it. It's financial, essentially, with regards to getting a bank loan to fund the apartment for rent project. I think no matter what, whether it's rental or whether it's for sale condominiums, it's serving a need in the community for seniors for affordable housing.
It satisfy a need for seniors who are on fixed incomes as opposed to units for purchase and ownership. And I, through this process, I don't see, you know, I don't see the science applied to it. In other words, how do we determine whether this is a good fit for our community in terms of, you know, fulfilling the housing need, rental units versus condominiums? And so I told Mr. Young, I said, if there's a way of conducting that kind of a survey, either jointly through community development or whatever, you know, the senior center notwithstanding, that's a given. But the nature of the housing, does it better serve our senior community as a rental project versus a home ownership project, particularly when we start talking about moderate to, you know, low income and meeting that need? Was anything like that ever done?
Well, I know that between the last city council meeting and this council meeting, a survey has been conducted, and I would defer that to Jason Blankenship, who is here in the audience, who can probably explain what it is that they did and what the results were.
Jason, you want to come forward?
Jason Blankenship, 2815 Mesa, South Atlanta, Rio Grande. Yeah, we spoke with you, I think it was about a year ago, and you requested that we do basically a comparison of what their mortgage would be versus their rent. So we kind of demonstrated that, I would say like a month ago, that it, with the interest rates, how they are today, granted, it seems like they're going up, that it would be basically equivalent, if not better, for them to own because of the benefits of ownership. But I can pass you out the survey that we did. I don't know how scientific it is. We surveyed, we got over 50 signatures. We went to the AARP meeting and then the five city seniors over the last couple of weeks. So let me pass that over to you, which is right here. Okay, and as I said, we have 50 signatures, and the question that we asked them is, if you had the choice, would you rather own or rent your house if your rent or mortgage payment was just about equivalent? So, you know, who knows in a year or so, but when we ran the numbers last month, it looked to be beneficial for the person to own. And so we have 50 signatures here. We have 38 of which chose to own and 12 of which chose to rent. And that comes out to about 3/4 prefer to own. Now, one thing we didn't put in the survey was that, and I thought about afterwards, was that we'd have an HOA that would maintain it. So maybe some of the seniors that chose to rent maybe were concerned about maintenance. So that's something to consider. But as I said, I don't know how scientific it is. We could probably pull 5,000 seniors if we wanted to. But I think it gives us a feel for their needs and their wants.
Okay. I guess this is better than nothing.
Right.
My concern with this approach and not having perhaps taken the time to apply a little more science to it is that we're, you know, there's a potential here perhaps of clouding this this survey with the whole issue of the senior center. In other words, if it's if it isn't condo conversions, then the senior center, the project doesn't go, or the senior center doesn't work. So I'm just worried about a little bit of contamination here. My whole reason for bringing this up is is that I genuinely wanted to know the category of housing, which of the two would be more beneficial for our senior population. So I was hoping that we might have taken a more thorough approach to getting an answer to that question, perhaps a little bit sooner than last week. So I guess those are my comments.
Could I ask a question, Mr. Mayor?
Sure.
That popped into my mind. Go back to homeowners associations. If we're doing some ratio of moderate income and low income, how will that relate to the homeowners' fees? Will the low income be paying the same homeowners' fee that a regular buyer will be paying?
Yes, I believe so. I'm almost certain, but I'd have to check with, like, the DRE attorneys and things like that. But I'm almost certain.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or clarifications? Staff report? Okay, seeing none, this is a public hearing. Any member of the public who would like to come forward and comment, this would be an opportunity for you to do so.
My name is Ray Abdener. I live at 955 Via Los Angeles in Aurora Grande. I've got several comments. First of all, this is the second year in a row that they don't seem to care whether they do fuel modification and weed abatement. Neither does the city, it appears, because as of tonight at 6:30, they still haven't done anything, yet I had to clear my weeds by the 30th of May. Second of all, what would happen if down the road a year from now, or not a year from now, but a year after they build this condominium situation, that 30 or 40 of the homeowners say, gee whiz, we don't want these seniors in here in the senior center, then what happens? And the reason that we've approved this is for the senior center. After all, the homeowners association owns the facility, not Mr. Young. Mr. Young gone down the road somewhere. And they want to convert this senior center to a clubhouse for the people that live there. And they don't want anybody. They're tired of seeing 60 to 80 cars come through here a day and park in their parking spaces and all these other selling things that everybody said wouldn't happen. Next item is you say that they're going to that the condo association is going to take care of the maintenance. What about the cleaning? You know, you have health and safety things. If people are using this every day, somebody has to mop the floors, somebody has to vacuum the carpets, clean the bathrooms and everything else. And a lot of the seniors that are attending these functions do not have the physical ability to do all these things. Who shoulders that responsibility? And again, do we really need condominiums for seniors, or do we need rental units? Because that's what this whole thing was sold on originally, was we needed more rental units for seniors. Thank you.
Thank you. We taking notes? Okay. Anyone else like to come forward on this item? Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment and bring this back. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one for us? Okay.
Well, I'm going to go through some of my, when I reviewed this, some of the things that I thought were important to look at, and I think they've been articulated this evening both by staff and by the public. And I'm going to start from the top and look at my rationale for why I'm making the decision that I am. The first is the issue of rental versus condos, and I think that's an important issue. And I think that when I looked at this amendment to the proposal, you know, I asked myself, well, why? You know, and I know that. That there is a certain segment of the population, our senior population, that would probably better be served through the rental units. And then as I looked at that, I thought, well, you know, we have approved this other project over off of Cortland and Grand that will be a significant amount of rental units as well. And yet we don't have the condos. So I'm looking at this as definitely providing for another segment of our senior population. I hadn't seen this before, but this does concur that there are seniors out there. What I'm looking at is those that might be living in the area that already maybe own a home, don't want to lose the equity, but don't need the large homes, but like to get into something smaller. And I think that there's a segment of that population that's out there that condos would probably serve better than your typical rental. So in weighing the two, I'm thinking, well, does this meet our needs? Does this meet the housing element goals and objectives that we were looking at? And my conclusion was, yes, I believe it does. I think that there is a need for condos out there as well. I don't know that I think when we were looking at this particular site anyways, I envisioned a different type of senior that would be then probably accommodating Cortland and Grand anyways. And I know that Mr. Abner had some very specific concerns, and I still do, in regards to access. Those issues are still there, but we're really not dealing with the physical changes this evening. Those have been approved. So I'm thinking we're going to have probably a little more physically able individuals up there, I would hope. In regards to some of the other issues, the senior center, I'm confident that we have the stuff in place, the language, the conditions that would require the senior center to be placed in perpetuity under the control of a local nonprofit, and I support that, especially if we're going to be doing the fees. In lieu fees or waiving those for that particular purpose. I know working with the senior group for the 2 years I did in regards to the Community Rec Center subcommittee that I chaired, this was a big deal for our seniors. And I'm not sure that the 3,000 square feet is going to accommodate 100% of their needs, but it certainly is going to move in the right direction. And so I'm supportive of that. And I know that Mr. Young has kind of stepped up the plate and offered that as a good solution for our community. So I'm hopeful, and I think that staff will concur that we have the language in place within our conditions of approval, within the CC&Rs that center will be not only maintained, but will be required to serve the public in a senior capacity in perpetuity. The issue of weed abatement, I think staff will have to get to. I can't address that this evening. The issue of affordable housing has always been one that I've always been an advocate for, and I've been an advocate for not just paying in lieu fees, but actually providing for tangible housing stock within our community. As it's written, we're talking about providing 15 units, and I believe that the current staff recommendation here is that if I get this right, 9 of which will be in the moderate income level and 6 will be in the low income level. That's currently staff's recommendation. I know that the applicant has asked for a deviation of that. I do not support the applicant's request. I believe that it's appropriate. I believe that we really, if we're going to maintain the policies that we adopted in regards to trying to create stock within our city limits, which is extremely difficult to do, we need to do everything we can for all income levels. And this is a way that I believe we can at least on a small scale achieve that. So I would certainly support staff's recommendation for the 15 affordable units at the ratio that they're currently proposing those. So with that, those were my thought process in regards to looking at this particular consideration of the tentative track map and its changes. And I'm in support of staff's recommendation with the amended language for the conditional approval number 83 to include the senior center being placed in perpetuity based on the in lieu or the fee credits from the park development fees. And that covers all of the things I was looking at, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Reynolds.
I'm going to go along the same line to a certain degree, Mr. Mayor. One of the I was in favor of this project from the start of it. I thought it was a worthy project. Evidently, the numbers didn't work out right as far as the sale of the rental of the project was concerned. But converting these 15 units into moderate and low units, I can agree with that. We need to keep our stock online with that. We've started to make a good step in the right direction. We need to continue that. One of the concerns that I had, if this became a rental park and we didn't have some language in there for the senior center being in perpetuity, is that several parks that I know of, the people, after they've been there for a long term and they've got the parks full, then they decided that they could run it better than the people that were running it, and they wound up putting together a project and buying it so that they could determine their own destiny, so to speak. And I would think that unless the language was there, well, that could happen to this particular case. But with the addition of that language in condition number 83 with the perpetuity factor of the community center, I don't have a problem with that. But I would agree with Councilmember Lubin that there needs to be something put in place to make sure that the people maintain it so that it doesn't become run down after about 15 years. So. But it's a good project. I think it fits that area up there, and I believe we need to move forward with it.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I start, can I ask the city attorney if he's had a chance to mull that over?
Nosh it over.
Nosh it over.
Yeah. I have, sir. Do you want me to answer the question now?
Yes, please.
if you had read a little further into those CCNRs, you'd have found the right provision. I have to clarify, these CCNRs, they're draft. The conditions of approval require several provisions in the CCNRs. They've attached them as a courtesy, but it's not until there's an approval and then it comes back to staff that we get to actually color these things and fill them out with the requirements that we're looking for. But they did anticipate this particular requirement on page 37, section 17.3. You clearly didn't go far enough.
What page?
Of the CCNRs. The last document in your packet, page 37, up on the top, section 17.3 reads, notwithstanding anything in this declaration to the contrary, any amendment to this declaration which would defeat the obligation of the association to maintain the common area in a good state of repair and which would defeat the assessment procedure set forth in this declaration to assure the maintenance must be approved by the City of Arroyo Grande and the State Department of Real Estate. Which is pretty much all you can do to ensure that it's actionable from the city's behalf. And then if you actually look back on the maintenance responsibilities themselves on page 20, that sets forth the actual responsibility to keep the senior center in good repair. So those two provisions together, I think, and the assessment procedures probably get you where you wanted to go. Then I took the liberty of including a few more words in our conditions of approval to tie that all together.
Oh, well, that's what I wanted to hear. Yes, thank you. one additional question. I wanted to go back to the point that Mr. Abner brought up, which was this ties together, if we approve it under the staff recommendation, that it can't be changed in 5 years by a vote of the homeowners association. What part of this agreement says, no, you can't do that?
Are you referring to the CCNRs?
I'm referring to the agreement between the city and the developer and the CCNRs and the resolutions. And where does it say, no, in 5 years you can't change your mind?
It'll be in several places. It's in the CCNRs now, and I'll make sure that it's in there again, that there can be no amendment of the CCNRs, which set forth those requirements without the city's approval. They will also be tied back in the conditions of approval, which are in the use permit. The use permit would then, if that happened, would be subject to revocation, which would kind of bring the whole house of cards down. And we'd also include it in the agreement itself. So it will be sort of cross-referenced in three or four places, so that a change of use of that nature simply, at least within the context of what we're looking at now, wouldn't be possible. Also, I have to mention the Department of Real Estate is involved intimately with approvals of senior housing projects, particularly condominium projects. They will review this stuff very carefully. They already have, I can tell you that. They will review it very carefully, and they'll take their own precautions to make sure that those common amenities are protected. That's really the sales pitch that the developer uses. So the Department of Real Estate wants to make absolutely sure that in making those claims that the public and the seniors in this case can rely on it. So I think between including a provision in the agreement, tying back the CCNRs to make sure they can't be amended, including it in the conditions of approval, and then the sort of the check and balance of the Department of Real Estate, I would pretty much say it would be very difficult to make any change in use of the senior center.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I feel very comfortable with that. Would there be any additional benefit to placing a deed restriction on it of any kind?
It could be done. I don't think it would be in this type of a thing. I don't think would normally be included in a deed restriction because it relates more to the use that a property's being put to at that time. I think you have adequate protections in place so that you wouldn't have to include it in a deed restriction.
Did you write that down, Kelly? I think you have adequate protections in place. And have him initial that. Okay, thank you. My comments, Mr. Mayor, I'm satisfied that we have put into place, as well as can be expected, all the protections needed to move forward with this conversion. I'd actually like to go back to a comment that was made by one of the planning commissioners, which was, had this project been presented to us as a condominium project in the first place with these senior or with the moderate income and low income units, we would have approved it immediately because that's what we need in this city. So I don't see it as an issue of whether we should or should not convert apartments to condominiums. I think what we are looking for is what is the best use for the developer and for the seniors. And even though this is not a scientific study and it was presented to us tonight, I'm pleased to see that at least there was some indication that a majority of the seniors asked would prefer to own than rent if they had the opportunity. I'm also in favor of staff's recommendation of the 9 moderate and 6 low income. I think the more low income that we can provide, the better. Unfortunately, I think you're right, Jason. I think that even the low income are going to have to pay the homeowners association fees, and that's an unfortunate situation. Hopefully, there's something that comes out of this whole thing that could maybe adjust those. I don't know how that's done, but at least something that can be looked into as this moves forward. I think the other question is daily maintenance. I think that's a good question. Even though the seniors are going to manage the usage, which probably to me, in my mind, means timing and what is taking place at any given point in time, who is going to do the cleaning, how is that going to be taken care of, and I think we need to kind of tighten that up a little bit to make sure that it is maintained in a proper manner, whether that's in the agreement with the seniors or whether the association takes care of that. Yeah, is not really relevant to me, but at least it needs to be tied down to make sure that does happen. Having said all that, I'm very much in favor of this project for a number of reasons. I think the seniors need it. I'm very pleased with the senior center. I'm pleased with the opportunity for seniors to own their own condos. I'm very pleased to see if we can get a signal at Camino Mercado and West Branch. I mean, that has got to help us, and the sooner that's done, the better. So I'm totally in favor of this project and would vote in favor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, Steve, let me ask a question. And the only reason why I ask this question is because it's related to my whole thought process here. Councilmember Dickens mentioned it a moment ago, so I think I'm on fairly solid ground. The Cortland and Grand project, if I recall our communication, is now back on track. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we think there's that's very relevant to this project. We'd probably have a different recommendation ourselves if that wasn't the case. The status of that is they have received approval for their 9% tax credits. As you recall, they had tried several tries at the 9% where it failed. They received 4% tax credits, which is a lower subsidy, and they could not make the project financially work under the 4% tax credits. They took one more stab at the 9% tax credits and received them this time, which is a significant subsidy. So at this point, they will be coming back to the council at the next meeting on July 27th to amend the DDA to reflect that change. And, you know, with that program, there's always things that could come up, so I can't really, you know, you can never give a 100% guarantee, but it's really unlikely at this point, I think, that that project would not go ahead. I'd have to, you know, give at least 90% chance at this point that it'll proceed and be constructed.
Okay. I have to admit that that was a big issue for me, and not to demean or diminish the importance of a statement made by any planning commissioner or any member of the council with regard to the nature of housing and who would have approved what at what point in the process. That's not the issue for me and never has been. In terms of the category of housing, we have always, I believe, as a city, taken our time to sample the community and to hear community input and feedback on the nature of the types of housing that would be important to them. We did that when we went through the general plan, the original general plan process several years ago. And when we changed course with this project, my only concern was that we check in again. And so that's the reason why it shouldn't be a decision of a planning commissioner or a decision for us. We're talking about providing a certain category of housing for the community. And in order to do that in a valid way, we need to hear back from the community. The survey that we were given this evening, while it is not scientific, I'm going to trust, Jason, that the two issues were not confused in this, that this the issue of the senior center was not laid on the table, that this was simply applied the way the paragraph indicates on the survey. So I'm more comfortable seeing this now and also with the statements that you made a moment ago, Steve, about the at least some degree, a higher degree of certainty on the Cortland and Grand project, because I do believe that rental units are not sufficient within the city for our senior population as we currently stand. So that issue has become less important for me now, given the discussion this evening. I do want to come back to something that you said a moment ago, Tim, on page 37, and this raises the issue that I do agree with on the maintenance language that Mayor Pro Tem raised a moment ago. The provision in the CCNRs in 17.3 where it talks about the amendment in derogation of obligation to the to maintain the common area. Throughout this paragraph, it refers to, quote, the common area. And you also, and I missed this, because you cross-referenced. Is there a definition of common area somewhere in here?
There is. Let me read it. I think I was trying to get
Okay.
That's section, which is section 6.1. It goes on to read, the association shall be solely responsible for all maintenance, repair, upkeep, and replacement of the common area, including but not limited to the senior center and any other portion of the common area specifically designed to further the physical and social needs of qualified owners and occupants as provided for in section 4.17. There are other times at which it defines the common area. It specifically references the senior center in that particular section, so it's very neatly tied together.
Okay. That's what I was after, was some specificity as to how common area was defined. And I wanted to make sure that it's specifically related to the senior center and not an open parkway in the middle of the complex someplace. Okay. With that, I would also support staff's recommendation in maintaining the number of affordable units. I would not support reducing the percentages of either moderate or low-income units. So I would concur with my colleagues on that. Those are my comments. Any other comments? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande approving tentative tract map case number 04-001 located at 579 Camino Mercado, applied for by Camino Mercado Partners LP.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Discussion in regards to any amendments necessary for the condition of approval 83 for placing the senior center under the control of the HOA in perpetuity. Is that necessary?
Yes, it is. Excuse me. If I could take some liberties, there's a couple of changes we'll need in the conditions. Why don't we deal with them in order? Condition 21, which is a prior to recording the map condition, I would like to amend. I'll read the condition and I'll read the added language. It flows out of the discussion you had. The applicant shall submit covenants, conditions, and restrictions that are administered by a subdivision homeowners association and formed by the applicant for, I've added the words ownership, maintenance, in good condition, and repair of common areas within the subdivision, and then I've added the following, including, comma, but not limited to the senior center, period. The rest of that condition stays at is. And then just sort of looking through the conditions and how we're going about this, what I would recommend we do rather than amend condition 83 would be literally take condition 83 and plunk it right into the map approval. It would become condition 62. We'd move condition 62 to 63 so it made more sense. And then let me read it as we have it now. It would read, prior to issuance of a certificate of occupancy, the applicant shall enter into an agreement with a private, common, nonprofit entity or public entity for the operation of the senior center, in parentheses, currently shown as lot 62, and parentheses, within the project for the maximum benefit of the Arroyo Grande and South County senior citizen community. The agreement shall be in perpetuity and shall be subject to the approval of the city manager and city attorney. Period. And that will become condition 62, and current 62 will be renumbered 63. And then, Kelly, I don't know if there were there other changes, or were those?
If you wanted to put anything specific about the fee increase, I don't know if you want to do that or not.
Talking about the homeowner's fee?
No. The free credits, I'm sorry, for the park impacts.
The question is the funding on the front page of the staff report. Does that need to be as part of the resolution?
Can we have a slight sidebar just for a moment? Sorry.
Sure.
Okay. Normally, the condition is that they pay applicable development impact fees, and what we'll do in this case is simply utilize the staff report in the direction the council's given to get them there. So, no, they don't have to. You don't have to amend the conditions to include that language.
Okay. Thank you. Those changes are fine with the motion maker.
Okay.
Fine with the second.
All right. The original motion has been amended as stated.
Tom,
any discussion? Any further discussion?
Did you second that motion?
Yes.
And you seconded the?
He seconded the.
Sorry about that. Kelly was.
Yeah. Any other discussion?
Kelly could read the whole thing back now.
Oh, yeah. We'll give her half an hour.
That's all right.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Runnels?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
You can keep them if you like. I just throw those away. You can keep those if you like. I don't know if it's okay.
That will take us to item 9C, which is our final public hearing this evening. This is consideration of a resolution modifying development impact fees for low and very low income affordable housing units.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. At the November 25th, 2003 meeting, the City Council approved the update of the city's housing element, which included a policy that the city would modify our development impact fees to charge no fees for very low-income units and a 75% reduction for low-income units. And so before you this evening is a resolution presented for your consideration to implement that policy. If the fees are approved, they will go into effect in 60 days. The objective of these changes are to provide more financial incentives for the construction of affordable housing projects, to make those projects more financially feasible, to have these fees better reflect the impacts of these type of developments, and to make our fee structure more consistent with the community's policy goals. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Otherwise, we respectfully recommend the City Council approve the resolution before you.
Any questions or clarifications in the staff report?
I have one, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Would this directly affect the project we just approved and the Cortland project?
It will affect both of those. Actually, the funding reduction is identified in your staff reports. So that was assumed. That was an additional 30-something thousand that reduction on the Camino Mercado project. It has a substantial impact on the Cortland Grand project. And as a result of that, we've renegotiated the DDA, whereas you recall, the DDA for the Cortland Grand project was about $400,000 in direct assistance from affordable housing funds, and then we had about $400,000 in delayed fees. We will come back at the next meeting with a revised DDA that will limit it pretty much to just that $400,000 assistance from the affordable housing funds. All those delayed fees will go away because by far them, you know, they're coming in with a project now that's exclusively very low and low income projects, which is somewhat unique. Most projects come in and they may have a few very low and low income units. Because of their tax credits, all but one unit will be either very low or low, so they have a tremendous reduction in the fees. But we've talked to them, and as a result, we're going to revise the DDA and significantly reduce the amount of assistance we had talked about. So it gets close to evening out in terms of its impact on the city.
Okay, I have a question on this one, Steve. With regard to the fiscal impact and some of the other projections in this staff report, hypothetical, if the regional housing allocation numbers were changed, would that have an impact on some of the facts that are put forth here, some of the positions?
They would. Yeah, I wouldn't define these as facts if you read through it. We tried to just kind of throw out some assumptions, but at the same time, I think in our description we describe why these numbers aren't, you know, very accurate, because a lot of these projects will come in and build these units because they're based on density bonuses, and therefore while we won't be charging fees on those increased affordable units, the overall number of units in the original project wouldn't change. And so in those cases, the fees, even though they're getting waivers on those units, the fees on what the project was originally proposed wouldn't change. And so it was very hard, because there's so many different types of circumstances, trying to determine what the overall impact would be. But yeah, definitely, if the numbers of units we're trying to target change, the overall impact at the end would be decreased. But I think what we're trying to communicate here is it's very difficult to try to give you any kind of accurate estimate what that impact would look like.
Well, you know, the current projects notwithstanding, the only reason why I raised this issue is, and I think I brought this up at the last time we gave reports, the last LOCOG meeting that I attended, this LOCOG board directed staff to unwrap the regional housing allocation figures based on the fact that, as you recall, a couple of years ago, we were dealing with what everyone thought at that time was a pretty unreasonable prediction of the population increase to San Luis Obispo County that HCD was trying to get us to assimilate on a city-by-city basis using the SLOCOG regional housing allocation. Now the state is coming back and telling us that HCD's projections were off by 50%. So we're looking at approximately half of the influx of people to San Luis Obispo County than was originally proposed. So that was the reason and the motivation for the SLOCOG board to unwrap this issue again. And so I guess my concern here is that, the timing, is the timing of this appropriate?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, two things. One, and we've had a number of contacts with SLOCOG on that issue, and it basically came out of a heads-up from you on that, and we've been having discussions and monitoring that. The feedback they still give to us is that it most likely will not affect this round of the housing authority, but or the housing element updates, but more probably the next round. But probably more importantly, as I think as it relates to this recommendation, the numbers as far as the level of decrease that we're recommending is really geared towards the economics of any individual project and what do we need to provide in order to provide an incentive to make those projects happen. So it doesn't really relate to ultimately how many units we want to construct. It's more of a feasibility of analysis and the types of assistance we need to provide to get, you know, any of these units built. And so it's really not directly related to the ultimate number of very low and low income units we're trying to target.
Okay. Well, the only reason why I mention it is because you refer to the 5-year plan and the numbers that were in the original housing element based on the figures that we had before when we talk about, the 310 and the 223. So
right, and those would change, and the ultimate cost impact of this could change, but I don't think it would change our recommendations as far as how we're proposing to change the fees at this time.
Okay. Just as kind of a heads up, and then I'll close this one out. I know you've been in touch with SLOCOG staff on this, and it may well turn out as they say, but that issue was put forth by staff to the board at the last SLOCOG meeting that perhaps we can take a look at it, and it will affect the next round of allocations in housing elements down the line. And the SLOCOG board unanimously agreed at the time, I believe, that no, we're not focusing on the next round. We're focusing on this allocation. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and what the Slocog staff puts forth to the board. But I would not take that to the bank yet.
No, we're not, and we appreciate your efforts in keeping us up to date, so we'll try to keep it as flexible as we can.
Okay.
As you know, the housing element has not been, the update has not been approved, by, so we're going to be doing some other changes also.
Right,
so.
And there are other jurisdictions who have not had theirs approved yet either.
I don't believe any jurisdictions have been approved from what I understand.
And that was one of the reasons why the board was so adamant about unwrapping it. Okay, this is our third public hearing. If there's any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9C, this would be an opportunity to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will bring this back. And there's only two of you to pick from to go first. So, Councilmember Runnels.
I have no issue, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
That's simple enough.
Very short, succinct. Councilmember Dickens.
I only have basically the item that I think is important here is that the consideration of the resolution before us this evening is really putting us in line with our current housing element, which was has been updated, not approved, but updated in regards to the city shall modify its development impact fee schedule to charge no impact fees, excluding water and sewer fees for very low-income housing units and so forth. Basically, what I'm saying is that this is basically bringing us in line with the policy that we've already approved, and I'm in total support of creating the incentives to hopefully encourage our development community to look at the feasibility of providing a better variety of housing stock out there for all income levels. And I think this is the one way that this jurisdiction can do it. I'm skeptical as how many are going to step up to the plate to do it. I think the Cortland and Grand project that we've been working on for those last several years is kind of an anomaly. We won't be seeing too many of those come down the pike. So I think this is right on line with our policies, and I think that staff has done a wonderful job of keeping us up to speed on amending this particular component. So I'm in have no problems with it.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
I support the change. Thank you.
And I do as well. With that, we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the City Council approve a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande modifying the development impact fee schedule.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin.
Yes.
Councilmember Runnels.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item number 10, continue business. We have none this evening. Item 11 is new business. 11A, consideration of fiscal year 2004-05 budget update. Good evening, Linda.
I think I need to make an announcement that everybody's aware. This is a kind of a momentous occasion tonight. This will be Linda's last official report to the City Council on the budget, since she'll be leaving next week to Santa Maria.
Where's the cake?
Well, this does kind of lead into my remarks. Mayor, members of the City Council, since this is my last City Council meeting as the Financial Services Director for the City of Arroyo Grande, I wanted to take the opportunity to express my gratitude for the opportunity to serve this fine city. I have served with four city councils, and though each city council has had a different vision for the city, all have been supportive of city staff, all have been very courteous to each other, and all have been professional in all their city dealings. The citizens of this community should be very proud of their elected officials. I appreciate the fact that you were all very fiscally conservative, that you waded through my very long and boring financial reports, and that you are generally just very nice gentlemen. I am going to miss the city. I am certainly going to miss the nice people that I have met. I know I'm going to miss the great staff, and I But I want to say that I think you are the best city council in all of San Luis Obispo County. So thank you for this opportunity to serve you.
And is that the end?
That's the end. Oh, you want more?
There will be cake. That'll be okay. We're going to be announcing a little going away party at 4 o'clock afternoon reception on the 22nd, which is next Thursday, and hopefully all the council can attend.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for those very kind words.
And the community is also invited to
22nd, Steve.
22nd. Well, now on to business. Mayor, members of the City Council, this evening I am pleased to present the budget update for fiscal year 2004-2005. As you're aware, the City Council adopted its first two-year budget last June. The revenue and expense calculations projected in that document were based on complex financial calculations, financial models, best guesses, and experiences. As the city enters the second year of that budget process, we find that our crystal ball is just a wee bit cloudy, so a few adjustments are necessary to the fiscal year 2004-2005 budget. The budget update presents three types of budget adjustments. First are adjustments resulting from salary and benefit increases in the first fiscal year. The second type of adjustment are City Council-approved actions, such as the May 2004 decision to join the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority, which saved the city over $100,000 in workers' comp expenses. Finally, are the proposed adjustments resulting from events and activities that were unforeseen last year. One of those recommendations is an increase to property tax revenues and a decrease to sales tax revenues as a result of recent experience. In addition, the state has not adopted its fiscal year 2004-2005 budget. The governor proposes that cities, counties, special districts, and redevelopment agencies contribute $1.3 billion to cover the state's shortfall in exchange for repayment of last year's VLF backfill. Under the governor's agreement, the city of Arroyo Grande will lose approximately $244,000 during each of the coming two fiscal years, with a repayment of approximately $295,000 in the third fiscal year. To cope with the net three-year loss of $193,000, staff recommends that slightly more than one-third of this loss be set aside as a contingency reserve this year. Through all the adjustments, staff is pleased to report that the fund balance is projected to grow by $174,000 by year-end next year. And that concludes my remarks. May I answer any of your questions?
Are there questions for Linda on the budget update?
I have no questions. What can you say?
Really?
It's your last meeting.
Really?
How could I tear it apart?
Be nice.
I defer all mine to the banker.
Okay. I have no questions either. And is this... This is not a public hearing, but we traditionally allow public input on business items. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 11A, this would be an opportunity to do so. Okay, seeing none.
I move for approval of the report, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Great job, Linda. Like you always do, great job.
Thank you.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second that motion.
Okay, a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none.
Yes.
There is discussion. Okay.
Yes, I think there needs to be some discussion. Since this is the last public discussion concerning the budget and Linda's process and how she's brought this budget along, I think it's imperative that we acknowledge the fact over the last few years that our budget process has improved significantly, a direct result of us having the great insight, and I'm sure we're all going to take credit of hiring Linda and having her on staff. I can honestly say with my limited financial background, that Linda has probably been the most educated and the most detail-oriented chief financial officer of any organization I've had the opportunity to deal with. I've been very impressed with Linda, with the production of the product that she provides us, with the information that we have seen. I think in 3.5 years, I've only found one mistake, and that was at my first meeting, and she'll never let me forget that. I, for one, think it's a significant loss to the city to have Linda move on. While I congratulate her on the significant opportunities that she is seeking and will be receiving in Santa Maria, I think it's a great loss to the city of Arroyo Grande. And I, for one, am very sorry to see you go. And I think you've done an outstanding job.
Okay. I was going to wait until after the vote was taken. We still have a motion on the floor, but I echo some of or all of Mayor Pro Tem's comments. I think we'll go ahead and get the vote out of the way and then don't leave just yet, Linda. If there's no other discussion, roll call, please.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. I would just like to amplify a bit, if I could, Linda. And once again, you've heard us compliment you many times from the dais. Just about every fiscal budget report that you give has been on target. I think probably the most impressive thing about you for us has been your ability to use your insight and your professionalism to see in that crystal ball that you referred to a moment ago. These are such uncertain times fiscally throughout the state, and certainly we're affected by that uncertainty. And I think the only secure feeling that I have throughout this fiscal planning environment has been your ability to lead us through these uncertain times. And I think that's a trait that not a lot of finance officers and finance directors have. I don't look at you in the traditional sense of how we refer to fiscal officers. You're not a bean counter. You're more of a seer and soothsayer as it comes to the fiscal application. Municipal budgeting is a tough business. It's very intricate and requires a good deal of professionalism. And you've kept us moving in the right direction and through so many crises. I just can't even begin to imagine how we're going to replace you. Your shoes are going to be very difficult to fill. We're going to miss you, and we're going to miss your professionalism and your insight, and we're going to miss your personality. And so wish you all the luck as you abandon us. And I hope you'll come back and see us.
I will. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Yeah. And I, too, would like to compliment you and thank you, Linda, for all the assistance that you gave me and us when we were going through the retrofit on the Lopez Dam project. Your number crunching and analyst ability of some of those things was a lot of help to us, and I think that was one of the things that helped us get the bond issue passed, was everybody working together, and you spearheaded that quite well. And unfortunately, you're going to take the chickens with you to Santa Maria, and have them out there talking to you, but it's been a pleasure to work with you and know you, and we're going to miss you, and best of luck in the future.
It has been a pleasure to work with all of you. It really has. And I'd love to take credit for all the projections and everything that have gone into some of my financial reports. But I have to admit that our very bright and efficient city manager has had a great deal to do with it. So I thank him, too, for his guidance and help. So thank you very much. I do appreciate all your nice words and your good wishes. And I, of course, wish you only the very best. Thank you.
Okay.
We should add a lot more tougher stuff in there if I knew that was going to go that well.
We'll see you. We'll see you when the cake is present. Okay. That takes us to item 11B, consideration of the approval of an agreement with the City of Grover Beach to provide joint street sweeping services. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
You're not leaving, so we're not going to be as nice and kind to you. So.
This evening, I'd like to talk a little bit about street sweeping services. As you know, the council has provided street sweeping services for many years, both with in-house city forces and by contract. And the last contract that council approved was in 1998. It was an agreement with Daystar Industries to provide the street sweeping services. The council extended that agreement in November of 2002 on a month-to-month basis and directed staff to look into providing in-house street sweeping services. The staff report contains a table that itemizes the necessary things to provide in-house street sweeping. It includes the purchase of the street sweeping equipment, additional staffing, additional fuel costs, and the disposal fees. Now, Daystar provides services to both Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, and in preparing the analysis that's in the staff report, we contacted Grover Beach in an effort to provide some sort of cost savings for these common services. And the table represents Grover Beach's concurrence with the cost sharing for the street sweeping services. The analysis presented this evening is somewhat different than the ones we presented previously in that the costs were totally borne by the city in previous analysis, which made it more expensive than contract services. However, this analysis, we have apportioned the cost of most or some of the items in a 55-45 split, with Arroyo Grande being the 55% and Grover Beach being the 45%. Several of the items, however, are a 50-50 split, including the estimated disposal fees. So although Arroyo Grande has more curb miles than Grover Beach, they have a different sweeping frequency and somewhat more sand that comes up from the beach. So historically, the results are equal when you measure the debris in weight. And this is reflected in the agreement, which is attached to the report. It's my understanding that the report needs to be revised, however. Right now, I think it says 45-55, when it actually needs to be 50-50 for the actual disposal fees. The cost of the equipment has been amortized over an 8-year period, which is pretty much the life of a piece of equipment. And it is proposed that the maintenance worker be a full-time city employee of the City of Arroyo Grande under the supervision of the Public Works Street Supervisor. Now, the analysis indicates that there can be a cost savings to both Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach by sharing the cost to provide in-house street sweeping. It is also anticipated that the in-house services will provide quicker responses to citizen complaints and faster response to special sweeping needs. With that, Mr. Mayor, I'll conclude my report to you and be available to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Any questions for Don on the staff report? Councilmember Reynolds?
Don, you stated in here you're going to dedicate one full-time person to take care of the machine or to run the street sweeping at 40 hours a week, correct?
That's correct.
Who's going to do the maintenance on it? And is that maintenance going to be done after hours, or what's the situation there?
The maintenance on the piece of equipment will be done within the normal working hours each day.
That'll be part of his 40-hour week.
That'll be part of his 40 hours a week.
Okay. Now, and I would assume that we're going to have somebody to back up for vacation time and sick leave and whatnot.
Yes, we have an arrangement where we would have several of the maintenance workers trained on operating the equipment. That, in the case if there's sickness or vacation, we would have someone that could take over that responsibility.
And this salary range that you have in there, that includes all benefits, fringe benefits, health insurance, and the whole works.
Yes, okay. Those are the complete costs that we would have.
We also discussed an advantage of the cross training is to be able over periods of time to shift different workers into that position, so they're not doing the same, you know, job for months and months. Periodically, we might shift a different worker in there to keep, you know, keep the person motivated.
And by the material dumping and using a truck, I would assume that that means that you're going to stockpile a material and take it to the dump or the landfill, wherever it goes, on a basis when you have a truckload or a couple truckloads?
Yes, and that's somewhat different than the way the operation is handled now. I think they drive the sweeper out to the landfill when it's full. Our operation, we will, when we have a full machine, we'll actually dump it at the yard. And then when we get a sufficient amount, we can load up a dump truck full and make one trip out to the landfill.
Well, that's all my questions at this point in time.
Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I had just wanted to it's probably in here, and I don't remember seeing it, though. Approximately how many hours a week will it take for our one person to take care of all the streets in Grover and Arroyo Grande?
Well, we have – the way that we have analyzed this is based on a monthly sweeping schedule. So, for instance, provided street sweeping on both the streets in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach for an entire month, which would take up the entire amount of time, plus the maintenance and disposal of the street sweeping. That would take an entire maintenance worker's time, 40 hours a week.
Okay. So, in other words, somebody can get all this done within a month and start over the process.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Including the maintenance.
Including maintenance. Mm-hmm. The next question I had was, in terms of the savings, I see substantial savings for Grover in the staff report and somewhat savings for Arroyo Grande. And I guess it's just a personal opinion I'm asking for, Don, at this point. For Arroyo Grande to take over this responsibility and contract with Grover, I assume that's how we're doing it. We're going to have a contract with Grover to do the street sweeping. Is it worth $2,400 a year for us to manage this process?
I believe so. And the cost savings that we realize are the way that we can actually do in-house services is by sharing of the capital costs. And we've done previous analysis that show that it doesn't make it feasible for us to go the full amount of the capital cost. But in sharing the capital costs, it makes it much more feasible.
We also believe we can improve the quality of service, and then we're also expecting a future increase in costs. So while, you know, the cost savings is pretty minimal right now, so that alone I don't think would be worth it. But potential future savings and increases in quality of service are really what we think justifies this change.
So it's my understanding that Grover, other than picking up their share of costs, is not going to be paying the city of Arroyo Grande for any management or overview of this project on an ongoing basis. There's no management fee being charged to Grover for this process. Is that correct?
Not at the moment, no. They're strictly the capital costs for the equipment and any fuel and disposal fees.
They're just going to pay their share of costs.
That's correct.
But they won't be paying us for the supervision or maintenance of the equipment or the supervision of the maintenance worker himself.
That they will be paying for maintenance of the equipment, but they will not be paying any share of the supervisor's time.
Yeah, to supervise the costs that they're covering.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes.
Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I had a couple questions.
Thank you. Yes.
Don, I need some clarification. In regards to the full-time operator that is being proposed to be hired, you also talk about the maintenance being able to be done within the 40 hours a week, the maintenance on the – and that would be the ongoing maintenance in any kind of major – and there could be the potential within the next 8 years of any kind of a major overhaul on the units that are being proposed to be purchased. Would that maintenance – be done by the operator, or would it be done by in-house by our maintenance staff that's currently employed by Public Works?
I think we envisioned that the maintenance would be done by the maintenance worker hired to operate the piece of equipment, so that any time that he's not operating the equipment on the street, he would be at the yard maintaining the equipment. Any major breakdowns would be, we would have to go outside with to an outside vendor to get that repair done. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So any major repairs that need to be done on these machines would have to be done outside, because right. A typical maintenance worker three doesn't really have the. This individual may have the skill, but typically doesn't have the automotive or the probably the specialized. And I'm assuming that this piece of equipment will have some specialized training necessary for its day-to-day operations, maintenance, and so forth. And has that been taken into consideration in regards to specific training on the proposed Timeco 610 street sweeper?
Yes, I think it's envisioned that we will have some specific training on the specific piece of equipment. Regular routine maintenance will be done by this person, changing brushes, cleaning, lubricating, whatever. But, for instance, major overhauls of transmissions and motors and things like that will be done by an outside vendor. But, yes, they will receive some sort of specialized training, as well as some of the other maintenance people that will be filling in.
Yeah, it's mainly the maintenance of the equipment on the truck, not necessarily the vehicle itself. But it's that maintenance is critical, because cleaning those things out on a regular basis is really what makes the difference in terms of whether it's functioning and effectively cleaning the streets versus going by and just having all that dirt spit out again.
In regards to the current schedule, are we currently sweeping each street once a month, or is there a schedule where we may hit certain areas more frequently?
Oh, there's definitely a varied frequency for certain areas. The residential areas are swept once a month. Our arterials, major arterials, are swept Mondays and Fridays. Every Monday, our minor arterials are swept. Parking lots twice a month. And then we have special sweeps in the residential area where we've targeted certain areas that have lots of trees or some other problem that need cleaning more frequently. So,
and that schedule has already been developed, and so you're just transposing that particular schedule to the new proposal, and then adding Grover Beach into that proposal.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And that can all be accommodated within a 40-hour week.
Well, it'll be accommodated within the month.
Within the month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What happens as we grow, and now we have more curb mile to accommodate both in Grover and in Agora Grande? Would that then in the future require us to hire on another person? And then how would we then accommodate that, given the limited amount of equipment that we have?
I mean, the beauty of incorporating this into our existing operation and cross training together. Right. The beauty of incorporating this
This particular street sweeper, that's a fairly costly unit and very specialized, mm-hmm. now running more than 40 hours a week. And at that point, the wear and tear on that particular equipment is, you know, or it could be a potential problem. And my last question, I guess, is what if, you know, as you were talking about amortizing this particular unit out over 8 years, what if it only lasts seven? Our margin of profit has now gone out the window. In other words, we're talking about a fairly expensive unit mm-hmm. that we're projecting will last us 8 years at 40 hours a week running all these streets and so forth. So whereas with a contract, that particular, in a sense, Daystar, the folks that we were working with in the past, have more than one unit that they would then put online while the other unit's under the weather. Mm-hmm. What happens when our unit goes down for a week?
Well, I think that's the beauty of the flexibility that we would have, and we can change up routes and do different things to accommodate the areas that weren't swept. I think we can, based on the providing the service in-house, I think we have more flexibility in doing streets when we want and when we need to. So I see that as if we do have a problem and we have a downtime, I think that we can rearrange the schedule so that it would accommodate our needs.
Our research in looking at this is most problems, the vehicle's only down for a day, and you can adjust that in the schedules, which I think probably the other existing company does that most of the times also.
Mr. Mayor, those are all my questions.
I've got a couple more after you go if you want.
I have nothing.
excuse me, maybe this would be for you, Steve. If we were to go out and have a contractor do this, with the way the rules and regulations are changing on hiring labor, would their individual be subject to the prevailing wage rate?
Not currently, but there's a strong, and that's another concern we have in the future. As I mentioned, we think we'll be getting more savings actually as we go along when we look at the trends. But that would be a huge aspect. There's a major effort at the state level right now to put contract street sweeping under prevailing wage. And if that were to happen, there'd be a huge cost difference. And so this, you know, we don't want to do this at this point just for that, but this certainly sets us up for that, where we would be well established if that were to take place, to avoid the impacts of that.
Have we solicited any input from the vendors to see if our numbers are pretty much in line with what they would bid it at, or are we even going to look at that point of it?
Well, we compared our cost to what we're currently paying them, but then we also compared it to Grover, who more recently went out to bid and got a bid from the same company, and theirs is much higher. So our expectation is probably
maintenance yard, who can report that to our clerk, who can, you know, put notices out and those sorts of things, is really a big advantage for us. We can more accurately and faster address those kinds of situations where there's problems and getting to where we need to go.
Also, when we get calls because somebody missed something or there's a little spot that came up for some reason, the whole customer service aspect, we think this would give us a big advantage because we can operate right from there, dispatch, you know, the person involved to go handle that certain spot. So we get a lot of those individual type follow-up things that we need to do.
But if we go forward with this proposal, and a year from now or 6 months from now or 5 years from now things go sour and we find out we can't do it as efficiently as well as we thought we could do it, we can go out and rebid it and start over, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
One quick one. Do you have any idea what the useful life of a machine is?
8 years.
No, that's the depreciation, but what's the useful life?
We think it's pretty much used for about 8 years. But, I mean, you can patch them together and get maybe 10 or 11 or 12 years out of it.
Thank you.
I mean, Don, after eight, weren't we talking about that could become a backup vehicle for a while at that time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did talk about using it as a backup and purchasing a new vehicle.
Thank you.
I do have one quick question, and maybe it's in here and I'm not seeing it. Do we have a sense of how the City Council in Grover Beach stands on this issue?
I hate to speak for the City of Grover Beach, but I've talked to their manager, and many times we've met with them, and they're, I think, even more enthused than we are. They actually have some probably stronger concerns just about the service levels than we do. And they believe strongly this is going to be an opportunity to improve those service levels. So they're fairly confident at this time that it'll be well received by the council. It will be on their agenda next Monday. So we will know within a week whether this is going to work out.
Okay. There are no other questions in the staff report. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but we will allow feedback or input from the public. If there's any member of the audience who would like to come forward, comment on 11B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so.
Dane Phillips, 399 Spanish Moss Lane, Arroyo Grande, California. I originally came here tonight to support my friend and my colleague professionally, Sean St. Denis of SP Maintenance Incorporated. But before I do that, on a personal note, as Linda indicated earlier that she was stepping down, I have been your contractor citizen here for many years, almost a quarter of a century. I'm actually about 5 months away from being a senior citizen. And as a citizen of this town, I never really had the opportunity in front of council to thank you as a citizen or other council members that came before me. I have been before many councils and many mayors. I have always, as a businessman, I've always kind of sat back in wonderment how you do what you do professionally during the course of your business day, and then you provide the amount of time that it takes to do what you do here in the evenings. I've always have been kind of in wonderment how that all happens, the amount of time that it takes, the caring that it that you display. And as Linda thanked you, I thank you. I take my hat off to each and every one of you for having provided the time that you do in behalf of the citizens here. Jim, I thank you personally, not only as a council member, but the devotion and the time that you take over at our high school, where you have been of great significance and benefit to the kids that go there. My son, personally this year, his grades more than doubled as far as in their GPA over the course of 1 year, and I know that you played a part in that. I wanted to thank all of you, really. Actually, Tom, I appreciate the hospitality that you gave me when you invited me over to your farm, and we sat down in the barn at the table, and you gave me an opportunity to get acquainted with you. And likewise, the time that you spent with me, Mr. Mayor, up in San Luis Obispo, I appreciate the time that you took to get acquainted with me. And Sandy, we go back probably a good 20 years, and I have admired you for such a long time, and I have appreciated your loyalty and your support of me personally and my company over the years. With all of that having been said, I guess this is my time to step down and say goodbye. I wish all of you the best. I wish you wisdom and a continued sense of caring and leadership in behalf of our town. I have learned a few things at this post over a period of almost 20 years, what it takes to do this job. I disagree with staff's position in many areas, and if required, I would then again, goodbye, thank you. You helped me and my family in supporting of my children over the years here, and it's been appreciated on my part. You've always dealt me fairly and with respect. And it's been a pleasure to work with you, Don, over the years. Thank you, sir. And with all of that having been said, I would like to introduce my colleague and my friend, Sean St. Denis. I am so proud of him. I have known him for the better part of a decade. He came up the way I did in my business. I started my company about 25 years ago. My first truck was a Volkswagen Bug. I was in pool service, and I put my pool equipment on top of my surfboard racks on top of my car. And things have changed over the years at my company. Sean, I know when he first started his business, it was just he and his wife in the truck. And so we've come up the same way. And he has built a tremendous business. I have tremendous respect for what he is and what he has done, for the knowledge that he has and the caring that he has for the customers that he serves. And I can tell you with all sincerity that if you continue with the service that you have had here and have enjoyed for the better part of almost 20 years and have him do the work for you, after a period of time, if you were asked, would you do it over again, you'd probably say yes. I think that the service that he would provide the city would be equally as caring as the one that I feel that I have provided for you over a period of time. And so with all of that, I'd like to invite my friend up here to speak with you just for a moment, Sean St. Denis, president of SP Maintenance.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, fellow council members. Just wanted to come in tonight, introduce myself, brief background on my company, and then a few items that will contrast my view of the staff report. As Dane said, I'm Sean St. Denis. As far as a family, my grandparents moved here in 1946, as Mr. Reynolds would probably remember, and raised their four children here. My dad and his three siblings went through Roy Graney High School, as well as myself and my wife. And now we're raising our family here. I'm a resident of rural Roy Graney out off of Corbett Canyon and operate my business in unincorporated Roy Graney up on the Mesa. As Dane said, my wife and I started our business about 12 years ago, almost to the day. It was mid-July in 92 and built it up steadily over the years to the point now we have about 40 employees and full-time office staff, full-time mechanic, area manager, and a lot of support around me to help me do what I do. And obviously as part of our growth, especially recently, we acquired customer lists, contracts, and equipment of Daystar Industries as Dane moves on to other things out of the state. All the due diligence, I've kind of had my finger on the pulse of things through that period of time too. So I've also bid this contract a couple times in the past. So if I could, I'd like to pass out just a synopsis of what I'm going to talk about real quick. I have a copy for you, Donald, so if you'd like to follow along. Incidentally, I brought my family along, and I'm going to owe them a trip to Bernstein's if they're still open when we get out of here. So, as their stipend. Labor is the first issue I want to talk about. Staff report estimates one full-time maintenance worker, 40 hours a week. It currently takes our operator 50-plus hours a week to service the existing contracts. And that's streets only, no parking lots. We sweep city parking lots two times a week in Arroyo Grande. That's done by our parking lot crew. I have seven parking lot sweepers that blitz the county every night of the week, every day of the year. And we folded those parking lot routes into those routes, existing routes in our company. So I took those 10 extra hours per week, as well as 10 extra hours per month for the parking lot service. I came up with an hourly rate of $28.69 an hour based on staff report's figures. And if you do the simple math, it's about an $18,000 roughly increase in what labor is going to cost the city, based on what it costs us to do it right now, time-wise. Do the math, divide it up for Arroyo and Grover share based on the 55-45% allocation. There's what you get. You see the numbers. Fuel is the next issue. I communicate with Timco, the manufacturer of this equipment, pretty frequently. I have a number of their machines. I know the sales rep that wrote the proposals for the city for this equipment that's spec'd out in here. Their data shows 1 gallon of fuel per mile on the Timco 600, the large machine that would be sweeping the city streets. The staff report showed 3 gallons per mile, which is very, very generous. I wish we could get that. So the estimates in the staff report have to triple to be realistic for fuel costs. And fuel is a big item these days, as we all know. The next item would be equipment, 1 sweeper to do this job. I actually have 4 pieces of equipment in my inventory right now, ready to roll out and sweep a city street if we had to. We dedicate 1 machine to it. However, we have 4 that could do the job at any given moment, and it's necessary at times. There are major repairs that come up that you cannot get done in a day. I just had our machine in Aaron Canby's shop recently for 2 days of welding that had to be done, and we had to back it up with another piece of equipment. So 1 piece of equipment I don't think is realistic, especially for 8 years. That equipment does not last 8 years. I wish it did. I've been at this for a long time, and 5 years I think is a realistic expectation if it's maintained impeccably. That sweeper unit is going to get sandblasted literally to death, especially a piece of equipment that sits on the ground, actually vacuums the debris. There's a lot of maintenance on that piece of equipment. I think enough said on the equipment. The historical analysis of the cost for the city, the 31% increase over the past 5 years was I think, a little, I don't think, I know it was a lot deceiving. If you look at the history of this contract from 1988 when Daystar first was awarded the contract to the present, originally it was $1,592.88 per curb mile. Currently, with the stipends that are attached for the landfill fees and fuel and the contract rate per curb mile, it's about $19 a curb mile. That's a $3.08 increase over that time period, or 16% over 16 years, a percent a year. That's pretty humble. In contrast, the city, their numbers were a 15.25% increase in labor only over the past 5 years, not factoring any other factors they would have had to experience also if they were providing the service for that same period of time. So I think those numbers, again, speak for themselves. And then the final item is Grover Beach has to buy in, as the city manager referred to. And I don't think that they're as excited as he led you to believe. Mr. Phillips and I are obviously in contact with those council members also in an effort to retain the service. It's very important to me, not only as a citizen, but in my business. And we're working hard. And I think it makes financial sense for both municipalities. It's not just a business choice of mine. I think it's best for the citizens of both municipalities. And the numbers were a little foggy in the staff report also. Grover Beach's documentation shows an increase in their contract they just approved in January of this year, a 3-year deal for Daystar Industries that obviously we voided by him selling the business to me. It's still on the table. The council can still award that to me. However, their current fiscal year budget allocates $54,000 for that contract. I think the number was 60-something thousand in the staff report that their staff gave to Arroyo Grande staff. An increase from $47,000 the previous year. That was their their 1099 amount to Daystar Industries for the previous year. Staff report I have right here, 64,000 is the number they use for Grover's estimate for next year. And the documents I read from Grover Beach on their letterhead said 54,000, which is pretty realistic. They do have an increase coming. Their contract bid at $20.50 a curb mile. So it's not a huge increase over the 19 that Arroyo Grande is currently paying. So I plugged those numbers into the little matrix that was in the Arroyo staff report and totaled them up and showed you what my analysis would look like, given some more realistic numbers based on my experience of what it actually takes to do the job. So obviously sweeping city streets isn't as simple as this little box of numbers. He gave me the complaint came from. I knocked on the folks' door, handed him a business card, introduced myself, and said, you know, I'm here to address this issue, whatever it is, whatever it was. I'd like to know what it was, how we can ensure it not happening again, improve service, those sorts of things. The second complaint, I called Randy to find out what it was, and I haven't received a return phone call from him yet. But those are the sorts of things that I'm going to be doing to make sure that we're on top of our game if we retain the business from the city of Arroyo Grande. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time very much.
I had a question before you leave.
Yes, sir.
On your line item in the document that you gave us.
Okay.
I believe in some of your statements there was some discrepancy based on the staff's estimate of miles per gallon. You said it was closer to 1 mile per gallon. Staff is saying 3 miles per gallon. I'm looking at your fuel cost line item, and you say based on 3 miles per gallon. Did you mean to put 1 mile per gallon in there?
I did. I just got that. My very, very competent office manager typed this up for me. So,
okay.
I'll take full credit for that, though.
And then on the other, I guess my question is on the maintenance worker 3, permanent with benefits, you've elevated those figures by $10,000. For us, and roughly the same for Grover.
About $8,200 and change for Grover, yes.
So, once again, how did you arrive at those figures?
That first item on the front page, item number one, the staff's numbers were based on a 40-hour week. It consistently takes us 50 plus. I think I was pretty generous in using only 50 hours because it's not a very predictable animal. In the fall, there's much more of a workload than certain other times of the year, and it's consistently 50 plus hours a week. So I added 10 hours per week times 52 weeks a year is 2,080 hours times the hourly rate I came up just by reversing the math on the city's numbers for the maintenance worker's salary. And I came up with an hourly rate of $28.69 an hour, if that sounds right. I just reversed the math. I divided it by 52 and by 40 hours a week, and that's what I came up with.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we will close that portion and bring it back to council. Councilmember Reynolds.
It needs to be said that Grover has to go along and work with this if it's going to work. If they throw it out, well, then we're not going to go anywhere with it, I don't believe. So those are my comments, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've given this issue a lot of thought, and we've got a lot of information before us this evening. I'm certainly not an expert in the street sweeping, that's for sure. But I'm trying to get a grasp on this. And the reality is that what we have to look at from, as policymakers, is I think a couple issues. One, we need to first and foremost provide a service to the community at large. That's been what's been done. And we're, you know, the city, or at least my position, is we're going to continue to do that same level of service in one form or fashion or the other. The second issue that we have to look at is fiscal responsibility. And that's the question that I have that I don't really feel I'm comfortable with this evening. I certainly appreciate staff's time and effort and put into the numbers here, but I'm skeptical as to, when it's all said and done, whether there's going to be a fiscal positive sum of funds left over in relations to doing this privately. And so I'm trying to weigh, you know, something that the city has never done before, at least that I know of. I don't know if have we done. Way back. Okay. Way before my time, anyways. Something that the city hasn't done for a long time, as opposed to something that has been done privately for a while, and I believe has been done well. We've had our ups and downs in regards to other issues, but. I think that, you know, for the most part, from the 6 years that I've been sitting up here, the complaint log has decreased significantly, and that's something that I've been encouraged with. So I guess at this point, I would like to, my recommendation would be, I think that with the current provider, I'd like to give SB Maintenance an opportunity to continue working with this service to see whether we can come up with a contract that satisfies the city's needs. I think we owe Mr. St. Denis that opportunity to do that. I believe that. That not always taking things in-house is going to be better. I think that the private organizations, I specifically asked him, how can he you know, provide a service? If this is the numbers that we're looking at, the curb mile, the cost per curb mile would actually be lower than this, than what they're providing right now. And because of the contracts that they have, and they're actually amortizing this over a lot of different organizations other than just the two municipalities being presented this evening, they're able to get a better bang for buck. And I think that sometimes is better.
Over the years, I've watched street sweeping contracts back and forth with the city, curb mile prices going up, going down. We've had all kinds of issues over the last 10 or 15 years with curb miles and what it's going to cost us. We could probably sit here and debate the numbers. We have staff numbers. We have numbers from SP Maintenance. And I agree with Councilmember Dickens. We have no idea which numbers are correct. You know, we trust staff. I trust Dane and Sean. I have no problems with that whatsoever. So I have no idea which set of numbers are going to be accurate when it's all said and done. I asked a couple questions at the beginning which concerned me. One is the how long the units last and what happens when they break and are out of service. The other question was the management and supervision fees, the overhead costs, and the sharing of those by Grover. And I have some concerns that we're going to be getting into a business, for lack of a better term, without being paid for our services by the other contracts or the other clients. and Grover, in this case, would be a client because we would be maintaining the equipment, we would be maintaining the employees and the supervision of the employees. It would basically be our responsibility. When we did this with the fire department, there was some tangible financial benefits to us through the sharing of the training officer and the sharing of the actual employment opportunities. I don't see that here. I don't see Grover participating in anything other than helping to capitalize the equipment. And even in the staff numbers, Grover receives a substantial benefit. We're receiving a minimal benefit with potential long-term benefits. But we don't know what those long-term benefits are. There are some concerns, as Steve mentioned, about prevailing wage, but we don't know if that's going to happen or when that's going to happen. Part of my basic philosophy has always been sub it out. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be more cost-effective to have a professional doing the job. And when we get into doing something ourselves, we usually end up paying more for it than we anticipate. I know that. I see that in a day-to-day business sense, as well as my feelings for what we would do here within the city. I want to make sure that it's clear that there's no concern on my part about the numbers presented at dollar benefit, and we're not even sure of that. I'm uncomfortable with that aspect of it. I recognize that there is history concerning this, but I think that history has been taken care of. We are dealing with, for lack of a better term, we're dealing with a new vendor right now. We're not dealing with the old vendor. Although the old vendor was there when the city needed them, there was also some issues. But, you know, we've had a marriage for a long time, and that I do appreciate. So at this point, I'm going to reject staff's recommendation and suggest that we move forward with either a new bid or a continuation of the month-to-month contract and see where it goes. I'm not comfortable with the total picture right now. Thank you.
Thank you. A couple of quick questions. Don, if we were to take this in-house on a trial basis, say for a year, and we look at the numbers and we reconcile that with level of service and all of the other related factors to doing this, and as Councilmember Reynolds indicated, we make a determination at that time that perhaps it would be best if we then went ahead and subbed it out. It's not working in-house. If though under those circumstances, if we decided after a year to do that, what would happen to the maintenance worker three that we hired?
Well, I think, Mr. Mayor, based on that scenario, I would suggest that we hire a contract person and not hire a full-time city employee. I think that we would try to hire someone that would be on a contract for a year, knowing that going in, that we would try it that way first to see what kind of response we get.
Okay. Let me come back to the issue of the fuel costs. Seems to be some discrepancy, 3 miles per gallon versus 1 mile per gallon. Is that pretty much, is 1 to 2 miles a possibility here per gallon on some pieces of equipment?
Well, let me just qualify the information that we provided in this table was gained from the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So For instance, we called them up and said, this is what our situation is. This is what we need. This is the piece of equipment we need. What's the, you know, how many miles a gallon does it get? And that's this is the response we got. Okay. So that's the information we provided.
Okay. So that's a best case scenario. Somebody trying to sell a new Temco machine.
That could be, okay. Yeah.
All right. The other issue is, and this is sort of no catch up.
Well, as you know, this is not as critical as some of the other services that we provide to the community. For instance, providing water, sewer services, those sorts of things, which are more of a life safety type issue. Street sweeping is street sweeping. We can go out there and sweep the street a week later, although we may have to go over it twice. It's not really a life safety issue. And I think that's the way we're viewing that. I mean, if there's a breakdown of a new machine after about 3 or 4 years and we have to go down for a week, I think we can catch up relatively easy because we're not dealing with the life safety type issues here. I don't think that we need to have two machines necessarily. If need be, if that's a council concern, I mean, I think that we can always have a contract with a local vendor to, in the event we do have a breakdown, to come in and supplement our sweeping. So we can hire somebody to come in and sweep when we're down, if that was a major concern. So I think we can somehow work with that if that's one of the major concerns. I don't think we necessarily want to buy two machines.
Okay. Based on what you just said, I do have some concerns. Number one is the potential for there to be some discrepancy in the fuel costs. And I realize that the $1.89 per gallon is probably the jobber costs, and that's, you know, relatively stable, as stable as things can be like that. But the miles per gallon is a factor that I think, given the curb miles that we're talking about, could loom large in terms of the overall costs, at least allowing for some discrepancy between the estimate of $2,900 and $8,700. And then if we look at the time spent, 40 hours versus perhaps some overtime, and even, you know, notwithstanding the contract worker, perhaps some increased costs between the $32,818 and the $42,917. I don't think it's going to quite be that high, but it could ebb up in terms of personnel costs. The big thing for me is the machine downtime and the backup. So I'm sort of weighing all of these factors, and then I'm also weighing the last comment that you made, Don, about if there was a significant downtime with our one machine, we could pay for a contractor to come in and back us up. So I'm looking at those contingencies and those potentials, and then I'm looking at a realized savings of $2,409, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
Can I maybe offer another option, provide the best service possible? If it turns out, you know, that's the best option, we would recommend that. But we're kind of struggling here, seeing new numbers ourselves and not really having the time to analyze them and determine if maybe there's some errors on their side or maybe there's some errors on our side. If we could have a little time to go through that and try to present a better picture of those numbers to you so you could maybe be more comfortable when you make your decision, that's an option I'd like to throw out to you.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and you know, it's always difficult when you're talking about two municipalities here and who wants to go first. I would be supportive of that for one reason, and that is that it would buy us also a little bit of time, and so at least we could get the reasoning and the, some of the positions of Grover. If it's on their agenda next Monday, perhaps some of their feedback and some of their discussion might have a bearing here as well. I would be comfortable with a continuance on this and see if we can't tighten up this information a little bit farther. I don't know how the rest of the council feels.
It's fine with me.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, I'm okay with a continuance so we can kind of deal with some of this. And I agree with staff. It's not an issue of your numbers against, you know, someone else's numbers. And I think we're all in agreement that we're here to provide the best service possible for the least amount of cost. I mean, that's what we're all looking at. And from a policy standpoint, from my perspective, this is a very difficult thing to do, looking at these two different numbers. And so I wouldn't have a problem, with continuing the item and having it come back so we can maybe air some of these things out.
I would agree with that, Mr. Mayor. It would make everybody feel more comfortable if at least we have an agreement of what the numbers were, no matter what they said. And but I would remind you that I have concerns with the management issues and the cost of the management, and that that would need to be addressed as well if you're going to be looking at the whole process.
Yeah, and I think when you go back and you look at these two sets of figures, it might be worthwhile to perhaps in your discussions with Grover if we could look at some indirect costs, because we are, you know, the management costs and the oversight is being borne by us. And so I think that's a valid, you know, factor. Okay, with that, then I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we continue this item. Do you have a specific date, Steve?
I thought I did, but we don't have unanimity here. I would recommend you continue it to a date uncertain.
I would move that we continue this item to a date uncertain and continue the existing month-to-month contract.
We will try to get back to you at one of the meetings in August. Let's put it that way.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
And Mayor Ford?
Gateway. Concurrently, the Long's Gateway Center, Santa Lucia Bank projects have been substantially constructed, adding additional private improvements, including new front yard patios and plazas, new bus turnout and shelter, benches, landscaping of both the southeast and the northwest corners of the signalized intersection with Cortland Street. The other corner, currently vacant, owned by S&S and Ruth Day, is the subject to a pending specific plan amendment which will propose a new mixed-use project, including streetscape improvements along that corner. The corner that has not been previously addressed in the streetscape enhancement has been under discussion with the tenant, Gill's Market. Mr. Gill is present, and the owners of that property. And in the last 6 months, we have tentatively negotiated a proposal that would involve a 5-foot easement across the front of the Gill's Market 100-foot frontage, and provide for a low screen wall and landscaping in front of the wall, including some additional trees, low planting, a bench opportunity. The maintenance of these areas, once installed, would be connected to the private irrigation system and maintained by the private property behind the wall, Mr. Gill. The concept also includes further enhancements. There's a existing pole sign that would be capable of being a monument sign in the new wall location, a corner monument sign for both price sign and identification. there would be opportunity for further enhancement. There has been discussion with the Planning Commission and the Architecture Review Commission of the concept of a conditional use permit enabling the service station, which has a substantial continuing lease of the property, to also improve potential covered canopy application for facade enhancement to enable exterior improvements such as awning and signage. All of these subject to the City Council agreeing on the concept of an acceptable easement and enhancement across the frontage. In the last 2 months, we have obtained the signatures of the property owners, and this proposal is before you this evening as new business. There is a related item on the Long's frontage, also requiring consideration of city expenditure. In the final analysis of the intersection, there are signal control box and an electrical riser, which are not particularly scenic in the Gateway Center frontage. And we have investigated the cost of resources. The signal impact fee would fund the signal improvement. Street improvement funds could be used to complement the frontage of the Gills Market. A single driveway would be removed that would significantly improve the right turn movement at Cortland. They would still have access to the driveway immediately east, which would provide entry or a right turn exit. They would also have the two driveways on Cortland. We believe that the conditional use permit application and the potential for a facade enhancement, although this is not a part of the Fair Oaks segment of Grand Avenue, are worthy of consideration and could be funded from CDBG funds if and when the request is made for facade enhancement. With that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions. And as I mentioned, Mr. Gill is present.
Okay. Any questions for staff on the report? Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor. Rob, I just had a question in regards to the photo that we have here presented. And I know that this is a enhanced photo. I don't know of any other place, or I can't think of any other place, that we have a screening, a three-foot screening wall like this. So I'm having a hard time visualizing this and how... how it's going to look. It's in the report, it talks about the fact that it's a 3 foot tall split face block wall. Now, is that, I'm assuming, cinder block? Is that what we're talking about?
The exact design would be approved by the Architecture Review Commission. The concept that we sought was similar to the low walls that make up the bench and the bulb outs. It could be rock faced, it could include a berm to minimize the appearance of the wall from the street side. The design of the wall would include a appropriate treatment on the backside, so it would also be attractive from the Gills Market looking outward. The split face reference was specifically the type of wall that or the type of block that has been used in the remainder of the Town and Country Center. Spencer's Market Center, there's a split face block, which is not a machine face concrete block requiring stucco. It's a architectural texture. And the same color scheme could be applied on the inside of Gill's Market, and then the exterior could be the plant-on faux stone that was used in the remainder of the frontage bulb outs. Okay. So the exact design is I think subject to refinement, we would run the proposal through ARC with more detail. This was strictly a photo montage to show what the existing building looked like before and what the screen wall and potential awning. This in particular was a very quick representation of what the screen wall effect would be on the appearance. Right now, of course, it's basically asphalt from back of sidewalk to the front of the market, and there is no enhancement other than a very small landscape at the corner. This would extend a 5-foot landscape strip all the way across the full 100-foot frontage.
It does say, though, that the city processed a preliminary photo sketch to the ARC, which they supported. So that's what was my concern, is that I'm hoping the ARC is not, supporting the concept, but maybe not.
Supporting the concept, not that drawing as the material and color scheme. Absolutely. We have not presented the details of color. We will work with Mr. Gill to try and resolve the design and then bring back the specifics to the ARC.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Reynolds.
Yeah, Rob, since we just finished that new street, both on Cortland and Grand, I hope there's no plans to cut the street.
There would be no necessity to cut the street. The curb and gutter would basically remain in place. It would be elevated to become a sidewalk.
It's already in place and all that kind of stuff, so we don't have to cut it, period.
The other thing that we would like to do within the 5-foot easement is place underground conduit to facilitate the future undergrounding. This would not involve any change to the street pavement.
Okay. Well, one thing, it'll probably help that corner right there because it'll divert the traffic in such a way that's going to mix a little better on Cortland, I think, than going in off of Grand with a service station there. But I don't have any problem with it. We've spent that much money out. We might as well clean it up a little bit more and make it look good. But I'll have another comment when we get into the discussion.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay. This is not a public hearing, but once again, Mr. Gill's in the audience. Anyone else, Mr. Gill, like to make a statement on this item? Okay. Good, excellent. Okay, no one else. We'll close public comment. And Councilmember Dickens.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I just had a little bit of concern with the actual final design, but I think that we're all in the same boat as regards to what the final enhancements will look like, working in conjunction with Mr. Gill and the ARC and community development. But I think this is a well needed and worth endeavor in regards to the improvements along Grand Avenue in the Cortland area, and I think this will be good for business. It'll be good for the city. So I think that the monies that we're talking about, either through our facade program and the other areas that we're looking at providing the funding, are appropriate use of city funds for this particular area. So I'm in support of staff's recommendation.
Thank you. Councilmember Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I have no problem with this. It's going to enhance that corner without a doubt. My only concern is that we've spent a lot of money in the last several years on landscaping, supposedly making things look better, improving the image of enhancing the image.
This was there in the first place, and why we didn't catch this in the original design of the Longs section and so forth, that we should have somehow figured that one out. I have no problems with this. It'll be an improvement to the corner. And as long as it goes through ARC and we make sure it looks nice and it's got the right plantings and everything else, I'm supportive. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to thank all of you up here, my colleagues. I saw that signal control box a few weeks ago, and then I looked around it at the landscaping that was going in and the Starbucks on the corner and the trees that were going in and the decorative lighting, and then we had these huge metal boxes that were obstructing a good portion of that view, and it just didn't fit. And then if you step back and take another look at the three of the four corners that we hope to really make the statement for us as we enter the the city from the east, or from the west, I should say. This action that we take tonight will obviously enhance Mr. Gill's property, and then when the project, the S&S Homes and Matsumoto Trust property, if they get together and come up with a plan, sounds like we're on our way, perhaps, hopefully, that will round out that that entire gateway segment and really make a statement in a positive way for the city. So I want to thank staff as well for bringing this forth, and Mr. Gill for being willing to go along with it. And I think this will be a mutually beneficial improvement for the city and for you as well. So I'm obviously in support of this proposal. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we take staff recommendations and consideration of East Grand Avenue streetscape enhancement at Cortland Street intersection, corners, City of Rio Grande, as proposed by staff.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please. Or, I'm sorry, any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. That takes us to item number 12, City Council Member Items. 12A is one item that I'm requesting be placed on a future agenda. And this is a so-called ballot initiative that will more than likely be forthcoming in November, called the Gaming Revenue Act of 2004. I don't want to go into a lot of detail because we can't this evening. I would like an opportunity, though, since the chief is standing in the back of the room, for this item to be placed on the agenda, because I believe the chief can provide us with a very detailed and thorough presentation on the history of this particular ballot measure. I should also indicate to you that the League of Cities, first to for us as elected officials to join the statewide effort in opposition, and they're asking permission to use our names individually. The second thing they're asking for is a formal council action opposing it. So the only way we can get there is to put it on the agenda and to have perhaps the chief, if he's willing to come forward and give us a history and position on it at that time. So that's my request, that we allow this to come forward for further review and action.
No problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Then item B, request to place on a future agenda formal position on Halcyon Highway 1 realignment. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. I have received a couple of requests from members, and again, this is a project outside the city, but as our tradition, at times we do make a formal position and recommendation to the county in regards to projects and capital improvements that are going on our borders. And I think this particular proposal warrants at least a position from the City of Arroyo Grande. The issue that I'm concerned about is the preferred county alignment is currently proposing to take out quite a large swath of prime ag land down at the corner of Halcyon and Highway 1. And what I would like to have staff do is basically give us a current update as to where this particular project is. I've personally spoken to the Public Works director at the county on this project, and yet I think that with our updated policies in regards to ag land mitigation measures and those types of things, that possibly we could offer some advice, but that needs to come back as well as a formal position, if indeed we have one.
Okay.
I have no problems with that.
That's fine.
Yeah, I would agree. This is something that I would like to see come back as well, particularly when I saw the alignment that is on the north side of Highway 1. I had not seen that before, and they told us that it was going to be a swap for ag land. When they condemned the road on the other side, then that could be reconverted to agriculture, and that would compensate. But then I saw the alignment on the other side of Highway 1, which I had not seen before, and that definitely, I think, is going to require some of our thoughts along the lines that Councilmember Dickens just raised. So I would hope this would come back fairly soon so that we can get some feedback to the county.
That's exactly where we've been talking about El Campo coming into play to prevent that. And I have an item I'd like to bring up when I can, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I think that, you know, we've talked about the Orchard Street problem and whatnot, and there's some talk about the subdivision going forward up on the back end of the Costa Place, and I would like to bring that order.
So I expect it probably next month to come forward. So.
Okay. All right, that takes us to item 13, city manager items. None this evening?
None, sir.
Okay, council communication. Any communication anyone would like to share? None? Staff communication?
Just wanted to announce for the council, which I'm sure you're aware of, but also for the public, we're very excited about completing the fire station expansion project. And we're going to have a formal dedication and open house on the 24th, which is a Saturday, week after Saturday, at 11 o'clock at the fire station. And everyone is invited. We'll have a little brief ceremony, and then we'll have hot dogs and tours of the station. And we hope everybody can come out and see what we were able to do.
What time was it, Steve?
11 o'clock.
Oh, I'm sorry. One other thing. The Channel County's division meeting is being hosted by the city of Camarillo. Is that correct?
Yes.
On July 23rd. So if that fits into anyone's calendar, it should be nice for us to have a nice showing down there. So maybe we can get that out to staff. And any member of the council would like to go down, I'm planning on attending.
Mr. Mayor, also I've forgotten under council communications, I did have one item that I will be out of town on vacation in the next upcoming council meeting on the 27th, so I won't be here.
Okay. All right, that takes us to item 16, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and address any issue.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Vernon Frederick, you brought another thing to my attention. One of my concerns tonight was reservoir situation, which hasn't just happened. The second site that you put up on the reservoir, we had the same problem, went up there, the gates were open, nobody around, and so from now on, for one thing, I hope that we are notified if there's going to be anybody going up there, period. So that's our concern, our liability, and the city's liability. So that was the other thing, I didn't want to take 3 minutes. You're so early tonight that I figured you have a lot of time to go. The other thing that you mentioned, Mr. Dickens mentioned, one of the things that has concerned me for quite some time is planning what is going to happen where. If we don't get a overpass, and the last few years I haven't heard a thing, and that concerns me. I know this won't be in my lifetime, but I would like to see it get started by Mike's lifetime, but we are also working with our children so that we will have enough time to get it done. Thank you.
Well, Vern, we're working on it. We're about ready to meet again, and we've gone through the community process, so hopefully this thing will at least shed some light on it and keep it alive.
Well, so. I hope you don't get too upset with me, but I am upset with two things that shouldn't have ever happened.
Understood, and we're going to work to fix it. Any other community comments and suggestions? Okay, hearing none, we will close that. That will take us to item number 17, adjournment. And as was requested by Councilmember Dickens and certainly endorsed by every member of the council, we would like to adjourn this evening's meeting in the memory of Craig Kaiser. Okay, this meeting stands adjourned.
Okay.